This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 355 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
We are back in the cinema at long last. It's been really? A little while. Was it Evil Dead? I always get these confused.
It's been a hot minute, I know that much.
Yeah, was it? Oh no, I just remember it was the great Boogeyman that left such an impact on us. Yeah, so we're back for another one.
People wonder why we don't go to the cinema all the time anymore, and then you remind us with those treats.
Yeah, and we'll get it with this week, and we should probably touch upon, like, before as well, with, like, the trailers that we saw, and it's just kind of what this year is, really, for cinema horror. It's kind of wild that there's this weird resurgence, it seems, at least on the face of it, of these haunting-style films that were obviously so rampant post The Conjuring, and I really felt like that bubble had burst. Obviously, those big franchises were still going, but I feel like just the incredible amount of Conjuring likes that specifically got cinema releases had seemingly dried up. But this year, it's crazy. Like, we saw, you know, we're obviously getting The Nun and stuff like that, but we saw, what, at least two or three other just random new IPs that are just, you know, your stereotypical haunting-style film.
Well, and just, like, all of these different, you know, some are trying to, you know, we saw a trailer for, what was it, Cobwebs, that felt like it was trying to be a bit different, but still just in that wheelhouse. And, yeah, just it feels like this subgenre is trying to be more, like, it is fresh and new, and it's trying to have these different takes on it again. And it's like, man, how has it redone this cycle? Like, we're meant to be getting onto the new cycle that everyone's trying to latch onto, and this just seemed to have got round two.
Yeah.
I didn't vote in the re-election. Like, you know, I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, we certainly didn't, but I think audiences are, as we'll kind of get to with the way that this movie is doing right now, which is mind-blowing to me. But yeah, we're kind of, you know, just shooting the shit, because there, once again, is no news, which, I feel like speaks volumes about what's happening right now. Like, there are films, which we'll get to, and we might just briefly discuss our upcoming schedule, actually, right now, but, like, it's the lack of news is general. Is scary. Like, the lack of news in general is scary.
I don't remember it being like this for a while.
No, you know, we've never had this.
Where you're like, I've got nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, there'd always be, like, a random trailer or an announcement of a film. Like, even when we discussed something like Megan back years ago, when we didn't know anything about it, it was an announcement of a film that was coming in a few years, you know, that had an interesting premise. And, like, stuff like that was fun to put in the news. And there hasn't been anything like that, you know. Recently, we had that, obviously, the untitled Universal film for next year that's kind of been in the news a few times. I feel like that's been the only one of that ilk, hasn't it, of, like, a news announcements type film.
Did you see the Twisted Metal trailer?
No, I haven't. When is that? Do you know?
I think it's, like, pretty soon.
It's soon, isn't it? I'll have a quick look. What did you think of it then?
Yeah, like, I thought, like, it looked interesting and pretty, you know, what I want it to be. I think because it's got Mackie and Nev Campbell in, you know, two names of note, and
Samoa Joe.
yeah, so, you know, that's something as well. Yeah, I think it's, like, the end of the month, and I thought it looked good, you know. I think the concept of adapting kind of Twisted Metal, the video game, into this weird post-apocalyptic TV show, kind of, you know, Mad Max style, I'm like, okay, like, yeah, I'm kind of down for this. Like, it could be fun, and the cast of people that I like, so... Yeah, I definitely want to check out the first couple of episodes and see how it goes from watching this trailer. You know, there's a couple of the characters from the game that, you know, I recognize, and just some of the violence that's shown and the car stuff. Yeah, like I said, I think it looks like it could be reasonably fun.
Yeah, like, I'm definitely interested in watching this. I've, you know, not been the biggest fan of the games, but it's hilarious that this is a game that's being adapted because it's so obscure and weird. I feel like there hasn't even been... Let me have a look. I feel like there hasn't even been a Twisted Metal game for a God knows how long.
Not a long while. Not a long while, no.
Yeah,
I'd say PS3.
It was, yeah, it was PS3 generation. Yeah. So, yeah, we're talking a long time ago now. You know, decades, and it was already a weird thing to try and adapt anyway. But yeah, I'm down for this. I just read the one line premise at the start of the wiki page is awesome.
Is this like our weekly Game of Thrones?
This is so funny to me. It says, in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, John Doe, a talkative milkman with amnesia, which is one of the best sentences ever, is given a mission to traverse the desolate world to deliver a cryptic package in order to stay alive. Yes. That sounds ridiculous. The one thing that's not a green flag for me right now whilst reading this is it's 10 episodes, which is a lot, but I guess it depends on the runtime of those episodes, because 10 is a lot by today's standards, especially for what this is. But yeah, I'm down for this. Like, I've not seen anything. I'm definitely just going to go into this completely blind, because it's out in a couple of weeks at the end of July. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting one. Like, I don't, based upon the trailer, I guess obviously it's difficult for you to answer. Does it look violent? Is it like, is this gory?
Yeah, no, there is gore in the trailer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because that was one of the things that kind of, you know, the video games are known for their kind of, you know, their violence, and so I think that was important that, you know, that was going to be in there. And I think, like, yeah, seeing the trailer made me think, oh, okay, now this is something that we'll talk about on the show for that reason. Because is it Sweet Tooth, or is that
Sweet Tooth?
I weren't sure if that was another video game. Yeah, Sweet Tooth. He kind of appears in the trailer and is just like wrecking people on this like white backdrop and all the blood splatter, and I'm like, okay, like, yeah, this has got the violence in, which is good.
Yeah, that's who Samoa Joe's playing. That's like the only thing I know about this.
Oh, really?
But
I didn't even pay that much attention to it then, because I didn't even recognize that was Joe.
Yeah, well, he's obviously, I guess, got a mask on or something. I don't know. I literally haven't seen anything in this, but it sounds cool. Like what you said. Yeah, Joe definitely plays Sweet Tooth. Like what you said, like, if, you know, a Mad Max style TV show definitely speaks to me. Like, if they're not going to make more Mad Max, then someone else has got to do it. So I'm definitely down for this. So that's cool that we've got stuff on the horizon. Obviously, with our schedule, there's a Netflix release, obviously, this coming week, which is the new Bird Box spin-off. So that'll be interesting. So we'll definitely be covering that soon. Also, a movie that we did talk about in the news a couple of months back with a really cool trailer, I think you agreed, was a movie called God is a Bullet. That is now out on demand. So definitely want to get to that, because that looked great. And then there's a Scream Unseen upcoming at the cinema, so we might check that out. Obviously, Talk to Me is like the next big cinema release, which I know you said you saw a trailer for that you quite liked recently.
I was surprised, like, how I kind of saw that trailer. I was like, okay, this is like speaking to me a bit more than like a lot of these ones. Like, you know, as you said, we saw a lot of trailers that were just those movies, and it just felt like, man, the summer's going to be rough. And that was, you know, we saw Five Nights at Freddy's, which I thought would be a little bit of a mix up and something that, again, video game adaptation that could be, you know, funny. And then it was the Talk to Me, where I was like, okay, this is, you know, maybe this could be good. So who knows?
Yeah, I quite like the sound of it when we first heard the premise. And I think with it being an A24 thing, I'll always give it more leeway. Like, I still really value them. Like, they don't always do hits, but they still have enough goodwill that I'll always check out any sort of genre stuff they put out. There's some stuff. Like I say, that movie, The Blackening, as well, I think we're getting end of August, but that is out digitally also. So there's, like, quite a lot of films to talk about, which is great. So we haven't got to worry about that. It's just weird that it's very barren elsewhere. you know, the films are the most important thing. So at least we have got stuff to talk about. And I love that it's, we're talking Netflix here. We're talking cinema. You know, we're talking digital, we're talking TV. So there's some different stuff. Like we could do a special on Twisted Metal. Who knows? Like we'd have to see it and see how sort of horror focused it is. I have no idea how they're releasing that either. If it's like a weekly thing or if it's all out at once, we'll figure that out closer to the date. But yeah, fun stuff. Shall we get into this week's film?
Yeah, probably should.
Yeah, let's talk about Insidious, The Red Door. So yeah, the fifth in the franchise, which is, I think, somewhat surprising that there hasn't been the kind of plethora of spin-offs.
Yeah, that we've seen. I was literally going to say that it is surprising to think that there are only five Insidious movies and there are no like spin-offs.
Yeah, because there's way more, like, there's more spin-offs than actual Conjuring movies. You know, it's not even close. So, you know, there's three Annabelle movies. So that's the same amount as the core series. And it's a bit odd because you could almost consider the last two, really, in this franchise to be spin-offs.
That's the thing about Insidious, where it's like, you know, the spin-offs just happens to be called Insidious still. You know, the B plots just became the mainline story.
Exactly.
Like, very quickly, it was bizarre.
Yeah, because obviously the first two films centered around the Lambert family, and kind of told their story. And then obviously since then, the previous two movies moved away from that, focused on Lin Shaye's character, and I think they were both prequels. But now we're back to the family after all these years. So you can kind of, you know, think of this as a trilogy, but I think it's strange to think of it that way, especially after seeing this film, because I think it's very different to the setup of those first two movies, which we'll get to. You know, the kind of dynamic of the family is very disrupted in this one. But it is going back to those characters, and I think it was an interesting, when we first talked about it, the entire concept of this movie, of going back to the father and son relationship, obviously Patrick Wilson being the father, Josh, who also directs this movie. I don't know, is it directorial debut? I'm not too sure.
I think it might be, but
yeah, it feels like it is.
I'm just assuming that, but
yeah, I might look that up in a bit.
I'll have a look for you.
Yeah, so it is interesting. Obviously, he you know, he loves the franchise, clearly, enough to do that. But yeah, and you've still got Lee Whannell on a story aspect as well, but not writing the screenplay. But yeah, the kind of father and son reunited after all these years, but it's a long, long time since those movies. Obviously, Chapter 2 came out a decade ago, and in that time, people age. And what was once a little child in those first two films is now a kid going to college. And it's cool that it is the same actor. I think that's something that really puts weight on the film as to why it exists. Because I think if you recast that, it's way less interesting. I think knowing that is like a special thing where it's like, oh, that's cool that they literally waited, you know, 9 years or whatever, and then made another one. And you've got those same two actors reprising those same two roles. I think there's a lot going for this on paper.
I think, I think in particular, it is his directorial debut. Nice. Yeah, I think in particular, when you've got this, you know, young character and you just see that coming of age and see him now as, you know, in college, and it is the same actor, you know, it's what we said about, probably not that much on air, but when we've spoken, you know, about like Harry Potter and those movies, having those kids become adults on the screen and get capturing that time in their life, and not just having a different actor play that character older, you know, it makes it very special. And I think, you know, this, having him come back, the same actor, really does, you know, if this was Patrick Wilson and someone else playing Dalton, this would have been just way less interesting from the offset. So I think, yeah, the fact that they've done that is a real, real good win.
Yeah, like I'm obviously not a big fan or even a fan in the slightest of this franchise, as I've said before, but I do think that's something that it solidified the reason why this film could get made. Because I think if you don't do that, it's preposterous. You need to use so much archival footage, which they use, and family photos, and, you know, it's all linked with Obviously, no spoilers for this movie, but like it's linked to the events of that first film and what Dalton experienced and the way they kind of circumnavigated that with the children in this franchise, where they make you forget what you went through, which I think is great. Like, it's the best thing you could possibly ask for in those scenarios, really, to kind of, you know, you don't want people to live with the burdens and the weight of these crazy things. So I think it's cool that it's like, oh yeah, you kind of forget, but it's always lingering there in the background. And they obviously explored that with the father's kind of backstory in the second one as well, how that happened to him as a child. So yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff here that's like, it's coming full circle, and I think there's a reason why this was made, for sure. It's not one of those sequels that I feel is like, oh god, they really just pointlessly made another one, which is exactly how I felt about the last film. Hated that movie so much.
Yeah, that could have been any movie with you know, with a different title. There was no need for that movie to be called Insidious, really. I know it had cast members from other ones, but it just felt so adjacent. Whereas, yeah, this feels like a true trilogy of movies now, watching 1, 2, and 5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is strange.
That really is how it feels.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So yeah, we've kind of touched upon it a lot in this time, because I do think the setup's quite interesting. But what is the rest of the plot, I guess?
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, you know, you've touched upon it, that, you know, we are rejoining the Lamberts kind of years past, and Dalton is now going off to university, and kind of the dad, Josh, is kind of, you know, reasonably estranged from his family. He's separated from his wife and doesn't have a lot to do with his children, and is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like he wants to be involved with his children, but he also doesn't. He's a real awkward character at the start of the movie. And his mum is basically, we join all the characters at her funeral. She has just passed, and he's there with his family, and kind of ends up getting kind of like emotionally blackmailed into taking Dalton to university, and kind of the two of them kind of have this trip together to try to kind of create this bond, and it just turns out to be super awkward, and kind of they have a big argument, and the rest of the movie is really, you know, Dalton settling into uni. He is an art major and kind of unlocking his creative juices from his art, and kind of going into his mind and going into a dark place to create the artwork, unlocks the hidden memories of what happened to him as a child. Because as you touched upon, both Dalton and Josh have had their memories erased. Basically, they were hypnotized to forget the events of the first two movies. So these flashes and images are slowly coming back to Dalton. He's slowly getting more and more haunted, whatever you want to call it, spookiness, and then Josh has also got similar things happening in his life. And yeah, like this was a real strange movie for me, where I'm like, I don't like these movies, and I don't like these sorts of movies. And when this movie started, it really got my attention early on, where I was enjoying this dysfunctional family. I was wanting to see Dalton and his dad, you know, rekindle that bond. I thought the characters were really good and interesting. When he gets to uni, is it Chris, his roommate? Is it Chris?
Yes.
Her name? Mm-hmm. He kind of, yeah, he accidentally gets roommated with a girl named Chris, yeah, those two, I thought she was a great character. She was just it was kind of comedic relief, but just her light way, and she had a really great kind of on-screen personality, I thought. And so, you know, I liked quite a lot about the setup and the whole art side of things. I was like, okay, this is cool, and he's starting to draw dark things. And it really, like, I really was, like, getting along for it. And probably for, like, a good chunk of the movie, that is going on, and things are building well, and it's well made. And then it was just kind of, as soon as the spookiness started and the horror started, I was like, oh yeah, I don't like this. And then I just kind of switched off, and it just became more, you know, what I kind of expected it to be, with these, almost when the horror stopped and we got back to just them kind of trying to reconcile the horror and that side of it, I was then back on board. I do think there was a couple of jump scares that I thought were effective in this. And overall, when I come out of this movie, I'm like, do you know what? I think this might be a good one. Like, I think this might be a good one of these sorts of movies that I just don't like these sorts of movies. So I just, you know, I'm not fully on board with it, and I didn't fully enjoy it. But I think, yeah, you know, of the tons that come out, I think this is better than the last two sequels for sure. I think this is better than a lot of, these spooky sorts of movies with the, you know, I think you could go to the cinema, have a really good time. And I think if you're an Insidious fan, I think you're going to be happy with this as a movie from what you've got the last couple. You know, I think this is a big improvement on those. So like, it's a weird conflicting role that I'm in, where I can almost get to the point where I can get aside my preconceptions of what I think of this subgenre and almost enjoy it, but I couldn't quite get there. But I can, like I said, I think this might be a good one.
I'm really stunned by how nice you're being about this film, to be honest. Like, I massively appreciate it. Because I think I had a moment as well, like, for me going into this movie, I was giving this the most benefit of the doubt humanly possible. Because coming off the back of Malum last week and being pretty negative and pretty bummed out, and then being like, oh yeah, we've got another one of these movies to go watch. Like, I really tried to flip my mindset as much as possible. And I watched a recap of the first four movies and ended up being in a pretty positive spot. Especially after sort of consolidating the story of the first two, where I was like, oh, there is stuff in here that I really like and appreciate, that is unique to Insidious, the whole concept with the further and the repressing the memories. I thought was really interesting, and obviously with his father going through that as well, where I was like, oh, there's so much potential here. And then I was with you that I think once it's set up, I was surprised at how much of a throwing out the kind of format it was, of like immediately breaking up the family was a shock to me. Having him split up from his wife and it being a very sort of unhappy situation. He is just this kind of drifter, the father, and he's, you know, just not really got a good relationship with his children anymore, and he's clearly, you know, it's clearly fucked him up. Like, I think that's the interesting part, is that yes, on paper it sounds great to just repress and forget these things, but like, the sad reality of that is that you're not actually dealing with it head on.
I think it was a really real reflection of what a man would be like that's just had a year of his life deleted, you know, where you are just vacant, you know, and you don't even remember that, but it's almost worse because you're just not existing.
Yeah, it's classic trauma repression that is like, short term might get you through it, but long term is going to be way, way worse. And so I think seeing the effects of that years later, again, is such a great way to pick up the story. And so, yeah, I was like, oh, I was so in. Like again, I don't like this franchise, but I could not have been in a better, more receptive place to enjoy this film. And so, yeah, I was like, okay, I'm on board. Going to college, cool. You know, the whole art angle, I've spoke at length on this show. I think the last time it came up was when we saw New Nightmare, and it's happened a few times where, like I've said before, I love the kind of horror convention when it's like a person who's kind of through their art getting out these things that are haunting them, and you kind of get this creepy imagery and like, is it coming to life and all that sort of stuff. Oh, it was also in that, there was a bit about Cabinet of Curiosities last year about it as well. So I've just always loved that as a convention. So straight away when he's like starting to draw messed up stuff, I was so in on it. So yeah, I'm with you. I feel like the groundwork was there, and it never got going, I think, into a film. Like, it has the premise, and then it just meanders for ages. Like, I couldn't believe how slow it was once we got to college, and we kind of he's like dicking around in the further for the first time. I really expected it to move quicker at that point, and I think all of the cutaways, especially to Patrick Wilson's character, bogs down this movie so much and are all terrible, to the point where he shouldn't have been in it on his own. I think he should have only been in it as a conduit to Dalton, because all of these scenes that feels like he was just there on his own in a house are so unbelievably dull and uninteresting.
They needed him back for the you know, the finale, and they needed to have a reason for him to be back. But the scene in particular when he's putting these pictures on the window and trying to play it, because the his therapist is like, play memory game. And he's like, what, like kids? I'm not doing that. I'm no kid. And then cut to him sticking pictures on a window. I'm like, mate, you could just
table. Or, like, you know, an iPad, I'm sure, could not come up with a game like that. Like,
it doesn't exist.
Like, it is just, God, it really is, like, 20 minutes of bullshit, where it's like, we know you need to pop up in the finale, because that's what this movie's going to be all about, but my God, is it so dull. So in those moments, I was bored out of my mind, and really slowed the film down. And so then, when we were then cutting back to the college, it needed to go quicker, and I think it wouldn't have felt as slow if it wasn't for this below par sub story, which unfortunately is here. But then when we get to the college, that just didn't deliver either. And I'm with you that I think the characters are strong, but my God, is the haunting stuff weak. I think that's where I would disagree with you, and what you said about, like, is this one of those good ones? And obviously it's very hard for us to say, because this just isn't our shit. But I don't think the scares are effective in the slightest. I feel like they're so drawn out and boring. And I can only gauge somewhat off the audience, which was a packed cinema for us, that I feel like wasn't that jumpy at this film, certainly in comparison to some of the other ones that we've seen. So I feel like it really didn't deliver on that front, which I think Insidious, again, for a franchise that I don't like, is pretty, like, good for that. Like, I feel like that's the one thing that I'll look back on and be like, oh yeah, the red face dude. And like, there are some really good jumps in those, in that first film, really good ones.
There was one in particular that got me, like, a little way in, like probably half an hour in, and I can't remember what it was, but there was one that got me, like, I didn't get the timing in my head, and it got me. But because a couple of them definitely did feel like, oh yeah, you've got the moment that you think it's going to be, then you've got the double fake of what it's going to be, and then it does it. You know, it's almost the opposite of what Scream manages to achieve. But maybe it's the exact same thing, but I just like that sort of movie more. Do you know what I mean? That's what I thought with it, you know, where I'm like, is it that at this point? You know, when I was thinking back to Scream 4, when we had the police officer and her son kind of scene, and there was all the triple quadruple fake outs where the killer was going to be and stuff.
Do you mean Scream?
No, I mean Scream 4.
No, you mean Scream 5.
I mean Scream 5, sorry. Yes, you can see why I get confused. Horror movies, hey? But yeah, Scream 5. And, you know, there was the fake out multiple times, and I love that was one of our favorite scenes of the movie. And I'm like, yeah, maybe it's just because that's in the genre that I like. And that's why I'm like, does this do a good version of that if you like this equivalent? And I just can't tell.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I don't think it does. I think that, like, even compared to Malum last week, I remember specifically two moments in that movie that really made me jump, and there wasn't anything like that in this. And I think it is a shame, because I'm not going to judge a movie like this, obviously not, about that, because that's the thing I don't care about anyway. But sadly, that stuff sucked. There's the sub story that bogs it down, and then I couldn't believe just the general lack of plot. I think what's interesting about these movies, these types of haunted movies, in particular Insidious, and even like The Conjuring and stuff, but very specifically Insidious, is that they almost have too much story at times. Like, it gets so complicated with the further and the backstory, and which demons haunting who, and what are the rules, and how do you beat these things, that, like, I was almost stunned the lack of story in this one. It felt so weak, where I was really waiting for, like, here's the demon of this, here's what this is about, and it really felt like it was just not really about anything
specifically, you know? The red door as well, there was no like actual, you know, mythology around what that is. He just kind of accidentally drew a red door because he bled, and then like went into the upside down or whatever they call it in this franchise.
Yeah, the, you know? Further, I feel like it. Yeah, I do think that there was going to be some story stuff with that, specifically tying it into more of his father and stuff like that. And I don't know. I do think they bungle what we talked about at the start, which is the best setup of the return of Dalton as a young adult. I think he's just irrelevant, because whilst it's cool on paper knowing that going in, I think if you just watch this movie, this is like any generic protagonist of this style movie. This could have been any of the family in The Boogeyman, and it wouldn't have really changed the impact I had on this film. And I think that's really disappointing, because I think you have such a cool history there with Dalton and his father that just isn't explored. And you do get to some stuff at the end, but I feel like this is like so many of these types of films that I felt so exhausted by the end of this one, similar to Boogeyman, when I was like so desperate to see what the Boogeyman looked like, and then by the point they actually wanted to show it, I just stopped caring at that point. And I feel like it's very similar with this, that once we actually try and get some story roots in us and tie things back to the original film, it kind of already lost me at that point. So like ultimately I was disappointed by this, not because I was like, oh, it's another one of these movies and it's terrible, but because I feel like it had so much promise, and it really could have, I think, contextualized the franchise in such a cool way. Like, this could have been the best way to end this on a strong note. And I feel like I would have walked away being like, you know what, I always talk shit about this franchise and maybe I was wrong. And I would have potentially revisited the first two, certainly not 3 and 4 anytime soon. Yeah. Ever.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
But it didn't. It didn't compel me at all to be like, oh yeah, like, because now, you know, having seen, if this was a compelling, interesting film, I would have liked to have directly compared, because I've seen Insidious once, like a year after it came out. So I would have been interested to be like, oh, you know what, even though they show clips and I've watched a small recap and I can vaguely remember it, I would like to actually sit down and watch it and then see that kid at Dalton and be like, oh, I know the conclusion of this character's story, and it was such an interesting way it all ties together. And it didn't have any of that. He was just a dude, you know, he was just main generic protagonist of another haunting film.
The bit I found super weird was when he kind of figured out, like, oh, okay, the further, and like, yeah, it's not just a cool thing to try to stalk people while they're sleeping, like, this is actually like quite dangerous. And he's like, oh, I need to go back to the dorm, the sorority house, to like speak to the dead dude there, because he gave me a bit of a warning. And I'm like, is that really the best way?
I know.
Can't you try and figure it out some other way, mate? Like, it just felt so weird that he's like, I'm going to go see that crazy ghost that screamed in my face, like, in this dangerous scenario.
Yeah, well, that felt like another part of this movie that was just kind of dragging out a bit that was cool. So, like, I think that initial scene when the two of them go to that party and all the reasoning for that is great. And I think that is like the best sort of 10 or 15 minute chunk of actual characterization from everyone.
Yeah, because it's the stuff with the girl more than anything, you know, because she's probably the best character in the movie.
Yeah, like, that is another weird thing, is that Dalton is very passive. And again, we've talked about, that's, you know, kind of an irk for me, is the passive protagonist and how it doesn't generally work.
Lead for sure.
Yeah, like, she's the one who's like, we need to go to this party, we need to do this. And then whenever he tells her a little bit of information, she's like, okay, so this is now the plan. I'm now the expert on this thing that you're the legacy character here that the people have come to see. But this brand new character is now explaining it all. And then the other character, who's a legacy character, who's the big star of the movie, Patrick Wilson, he's just off doing this random shit. And he's a bit depressed, and his life's shit. He's broken up with his wife. His mum's just died. His kids fucking hate him. It's just sad. Like, and there isn't, I don't think it has like a redemption arc or like a justification for that sadness. It kind of, and that is somewhat realistic, because this isn't a classic kind of Hollywood ending, but it is just, it does just kind of bum you out, where it's like, man, I would like to pretend that this family were happy, but now I've seen the sad reality that it was all gone to shit, and then it ended shit, and it's going to continue to be shit for all of them.
I've had people joke to me before saying, like, I like horror movies at the start when everyone's happy and life is okay, and then when it goes to shit, that's when I don't like it. And it's like, yeah, movies like this is where, like, it's already shit. And it is, you know, it's a bit, it was Boogeyman, wasn't it, that was like it as well, where it was just like, it was totally depressing, like dead wife at the start of the movie. And it's like, yeah, this movie starts with a funeral. And like, yeah, you know, at the end of the, like, start of the movie, when you meet these characters, if you're like, okay, best case scenario, like when we get to the end of this movie, Josh is back with his wife and kids and like happy with them. I'm like, he's still been absent for years of their life.
Mm.
Like, so the best scenario is that they just have like a good relationship now with their shit dad. And it's like, yeah, it just, I definitely did have that moment about 10 or 15 minutes in where I was like, man, this, even though I was in it, I was like, man, this is another like sad movie where I'm like, no one's happy. And it's a shame because you know, I like it where I do like it at the start of the movie when things are okay. And then it goes to shit. Like, whereas this was like, actually the Haunting at least give these people a reason to be like miserable.
Yeah, I think that's a really good comparison comparing it to The Boogeyman recently, because I do think both these films are, they start in a place of misery and there isn't much progression. Mm. And I think that ultimately you can say, yeah, it's more realistic, like I said before, and I get that. I don't want it to just be like a caricature of a happy ending. But at a certain point, these are supposed to be entertaining and supposed to be enjoyable. And I, like, you know, we love The Last of Us. Don't get me wrong. We can love miserable stuff. But, like, it is a bit annoying where like I would like to see something like Unwelcome, for example, that has a horrific event at the start of that film, but I never felt hopeless for that couple. I always felt like there could be redemption, and I was on that journey with that couple because I believed in them. I believed that they could make a happy life out of a shit situation. Whereas in The Boogeyman and in this, it was almost like, this I believed it more because I really thought it would have a more upbeat thing and tie it together. You know, especially when you set up such an unbelievably, the first 10 minutes of this movie is so unbearably miserable, where like everyone hates their life that you see. There isn't a single happy person in this. And then, yeah, Chris is the only person.
Yeah, Chris is the only like kind of in the movie, really.
Yeah, like everyone else is just miserable, and like what's his name, Nick the Dick, I think he's pretty happy with himself.
Yeah, Nick the Dick, he's living his best life, you're right.
Yeah, so thankfully he's the light. If Nick the Dick is the light in the darkness, your movie's got problems.
Yeah, he's no firefly, that's for sure. But I think as well, like, I think with Chris though, even with her, like, she's getting this like fairly aggressive bullying towards her and being treated like an outcast. And you see a couple of times where it's hurt her and she is sad, but she puts on a brave, happy face. Like, she isn't just this singing, dancing, happy character. She is just trying to make the best of it, even herself, you know? You know, that's the whole point of when they go to the party. She's like, fuck these guys. Like, they don't want us to be here, but fuck it. Let's just go take the piss out of them. And it's like, you know, so it's still like this still, you know, quite dark place that she's in. Just she puts a brighter spin on it. I think Josh as well, like, he is just, and again, like you said, it's probably realistic. I don't know, because people don't tend to get years of their lives hypnotized away. But like, he's so vacant and annoyingly so that like when he's speaking to the wife and he's just like, yeah, I want to be there for the kids, but I just can't commit. And I'm like, oh, just fuck off. And like he's talking to the therapist and he's like, yeah, I just haven't been able to do anything for the last 12 years of my life. And I'm like, dude, like, why is it taking you this long? And it just, yeah, I just found him a frustrating character because he was just meandering through nothingness. And it just felt like he would forever do that. And but then the red door got unlocked, you know, and without that, he would have just continued to just meander through life, just kind of existing. And, like I said, that's probably realistic. You know, I think for people that have had to deal with real tragedy and grief in their life, they certainly do just exist for a period of time and that's how they cope. You know, but it's just, that is a very difficult thing to portray on screen for entertainment.
Yeah. Like, I think his character in these films, he's almost probably trying to be a complete counter opposite to his character in the Conjuring films, because I feel like for me, their love for one another and their relationship is really what drives those films and why I have such a good time watching the Conjuring films, because all the shit happens, but I know that they always have each other and they'll always get through it together. And again, you know, we keep repeating the same thing. Is that realistic? Probably not. But I don't watch The Conjuring or Insidious for realism. Like, I will never do that. And I much prefer seeing him, you know, go to a family that are in the shit and bringing out a guitar and singing Elvis and getting people feeling like there's some light in the room for a change, rather than what he does in this film, which is just go sulk and look at pictures and be miserable on his own. Like, I know which one out of those two I'd watch 1,000,000% over the other one. And like I say, I don't, whilst I see the argument for one being realistic over the other, I don't care. And I know which one I prefer. So yeah, it is a shame. Like, this one is, it's been interesting, which I'm glad. This isn't like a boring, you know, waste of time film like some of these other Hornet films. Like we said at the top, I think there's totally a reason why this should have been made and why it was worth a go. I'm disappointed because I think this is wasted potential. I don't think this is a wasted film or production or anything like that. I just think that there was potential here for a really cool, interesting conclusion for this decade-long story. And I don't think it does it whatsoever. And I'm curious, like, again, I'm speaking from a place of I'm not a fan of this franchise, so I'm not speaking authoritatively at all. Mm-hmm. I'm just giving my opinion on it. I know you're a bit softer, but I know you wouldn't really consider yourself a fan of it either. But I know you like the films more than me.
Yeah, I'm certainly not a fan of the franchise, but I still think that this is, you know, a good version of this type of movie. And I think this is, for people that like the franchise, I could see people walking away satisfied with this. You know, and so, yeah, I do think it isn't kind of, I think like what we said with The Conjuring, I think when we get a Conjuring movie, or so far when we've had a Conjuring movie, when we know it's got the, you know, the word Conjuring in it, and it's not one of these spin-offs, the bar has been quite high. And I think I think this does a job, you know, it does a better job of being like, oh no, an Insidious movie means something. Cause I do genuinely think the last two, it almost, you know, was to its detriment having the Insidious name.
Yeah.
Where, cause it just felt like, oh God, this is B tier, you know, instantly. Whereas this does feel closer to that for this subgenre. It's just, it has to be super elite for me to be even interested in it.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because they've been, surprisingly kind of defensive of the Conjuring name, like, or protective, I should say, in terms of, it is crazy that they're not, they don't just chuck that out there. They don't just bog it down. Whereas they have done that with Insidious. They have put out, I think, two pretty bad films before this. And so it's kind of like, it's interesting that people have shown up for this. Like, I think the return of these characters, whatever the marketing was or whatever, spoke to people in the sense of, like, people knew this wasn't just another throwaway Insidious movie. And it is actually tying it back to the original because, yeah, this movie is done unbelievably well. It only just came out, this is like worldwide, because I don't think this had come out like in America before or anything like that. It just come out in all markets. And it's already made 70 million this weekend, which is insane. Like, I feel like the best horrors of the year usually finish around 100. Like, I think Scream is usually like in the 90s around that mark and stuff like that. So, like, this is unbelievable. And obviously it'll have a huge drop off second weekends like every film does, but like, this is probably going to hit 100 million. This is probably going to be like, if not one of, or the biggest horror film of the year financially. And I just didn't think Insidious had that sort of weight. So it surprises me, but yeah, people are showing up. I hope people are liking it. Like, I have no idea what the reception of this has been. But yeah, I think I can totally see your point that this could work for some people. And I think it was, yeah, for me, it is just a shame because I was, whilst not a fan of this franchise, I was in the best place I could possibly be ever to watch Insidious 5. Like, I could not have got myself more amped for this, and I gave it so much of the benefit of the doubt, and I had moments when I was fully in, and it still didn't grab me. And I think that's what was disappointing about this one for me. So, I think as far as recommendations go, I definitely couldn't possibly recommend it at the cinema. Yeah, outside of that, again, I couldn't speak for my own place. Like, for me, I didn't enjoy this enough to recommend it to people. But again, I would say you need to know how much you like the Insidious franchise, because I didn't watch two of the last ones either. You know, so for me, it didn't work. What about you?
Yeah, like, do I give a personal recommendation for this movie? No, because it's not my cup of tea, and I don't, you know, I wouldn't recommend almost any of the, you know, maybe the first Insidious movie back in the day, potentially, but not at this point. And so I don't recommend it in that way. But I think if you're a fan of the franchise, then for sure I recommend it. I think if you've seen four Insidious movies and you still like it, then you should definitely see this, because this is an upturn on the last two. And I think if you like this subgenre, I think you'll also enjoy it and should give it a punt. But personally, yeah, still not for me.
Yeah, like, I think it is. I always like, you know, talking about the context, like what we just said, because I think context matters. And it's like when we talk about a movie like Sick, where we're like, this is probably not going to be for, you know, people aren't going to enjoy this as much as we have, because we're so into what this type of film
is. Yeah, exactly. You've got to put that out there. I think it's important.
You do, but I think ultimately we've been doing this for 7 years, and if people are listening, they just want our thoughts on it. And whilst I think it is cool to get that sort of wider variety, again, people know this isn't our type of thing, but we're still giving our thoughts on it. And so, yeah, like, it wasn't for me, sadly. But yeah, this wasn't, like, I won't look back on this like I have some of the other ones. Like, there's already other haunting-style movies, like A Boogeyman.
Yeah,
and even some of those other trailers, that one of them I couldn't even remember the title of, that's so unbearably generic, where it is literally called, like, The Haunting of Mary Sue or some bullshit, and it's just, like, those type of ones are just going to wash over me to the point where we're probably not going to cover them, because I just don't see what we're offering at that point, other than just, like, I try and not have the same conversations all the time, and I think us just saying, like, yeah, this isn't our sort of thing isn't as interesting as, you know, if we see a... I think Evil Dead is a prime example of, like, we gave a pretty different opinion on Evil Dead to the majority. And I think we were speaking from, we both absolutely adore Evil Dead. And I think we laid out the reasons why that just didn't work for us, but I'm happy it worked for a lot of other people. But yeah, that was our discussion on Insidious: The Red Door. I will take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is pretty much it.
I do have something pretty exciting to share with you.
Yeah, it better not be Terminator 2 related, because
it's not Terminator 2 related.
We've already watched it together this week, so we can't talk about it on the show.
We have, and I mean, you've gone down that rabbit hole now, but it's a great time, wasn't it? You know,
yeah, it's like trapping me in a place where I can't escape it, so I feel like I'm not going to have any say in it anymore.
No, that's going to be just your constant at this point. Whenever we have 10 minutes, I'm just going to put on a bit more Terminator 2. Because I think it's interesting to watch that movie kind of episodic, almost, you know, split it over you know, bite-sized chunks, and see if you can get the enjoyment that way as well. It's just, you know, it's a different idea. It's a, you know, it's the whole idea of the spin-off podcast, to do these different rewatches.
I would argue that whilst there is clearly a best way to watch Terminator 2, I can't think of a way in which the movie would not be great.
No, that's what I mean. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the challenge, to get me to stop enjoying Terminator 2 is the kind of...
To stop enjoying it, literally impossible. To get me to stop enjoying it, I still think that's impossible.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, it'll be both of us, and yeah, eventually you might get there, and then is there a point you can do that to me? Yeah, will it be like Clockwork Orange? We just have to, like, dim my eyes open and shove me in front of it for like 2 weeks. Even then, I'd just be like singing Guns N' Roses and having a great time.
I was listening to that song earlier today.
Of course you were. Yeah. Fucking hell, I've actually got something to talk about. Like,
yeah, but I want to talk about Terminator 2.
Terminator 2 to counteract my thing.
Yes. This is the ultimate throw. I love it.
Because, I watched a little movie that we both seen and adored and have spoken about quite a bit. And it's finally out there for people to watch, which is really exciting. And that's Lola.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got a little rewatch in. There's a Blu-ray that's out there now. I think it's coming to streaming in a month or so, I think it said.
Right.
And yeah, I got my rewatch in, and the movie's fantastic. It really is something special, I think. It was one where when it started, not even when it started, before I put it on, I was like, have I put this on a pedestal? You know, was this kind of just this cool Fright Fest experience that should stay at Fright Fest? And opening credits, kind of in the opening montage, I was like, nah, this is great. And then the second they kind of have the David Bowie kind of flick to him, and then they play the song while we get another montage, I was like, oh no, this is gold, this is fantastic. And kind of I really loved it second time round. I don't think there's anything about it this week, and I think it has such a great plot to begin with, this great dystopian future when they kind of change things, and then, you know, a really satisfying ending for me as well. It was a great rewatch. If anyone hasn't heard us talk about Lola, it's an obscure movie. It's not a horror movie. You know, it's a sci-fi movie. It's Irish production. And it's set in England right at the start of World War II, where these two sisters have created this machine called Lola, where they receive broadcasts from the future. They can kind of spin the dial and see, a broadcast from the future. The further they go into the future, the more they can only see something that was hugely broadcast. So, you know, First Man on the Moon, for example, as opposed to if they try to flick the machine to tomorrow, they'll be able to see all the news stories because it's easier to get that signal. They kind of discover music and everything from the future, but then World War II hits and they start to see the attacks on London and the attacks, everywhere. And they decide that they have to get involved and become, try to give warning because they can preempt where these strikes are going to happen. And in doing so, they change the whole outcome of World War II, and kind of that, that in itself is just such an interesting synopsis. I think it's such an interesting setup. It's entirely a Black Mirror episode. But then just the way that this movie is shot and the way it looks, it's this kind of film reel size kind of recording that's entirely black and white, and kind of so much of the war kind of footage is this archival footage that the filmmakers have found, but then they've manipulated it to turn it into their dystopian future. This branching timeline that isn't real. I just thought it was fantastic second time round, and just something that I think if you love films and you love things in this genre, then you should be able to kind of bleed into sci-fi. And we've spoken a lot recently about Black Mirror, and certainly if you're a fan of that, then you've got to seek this out any way you can, because it's really special.
Yeah, definitely, especially if you're a fan of any sort of time travel, because I think it's one of the best of those. I'm buzzing that this is finally out. This only came out a week ago. But yeah, we were waiting so long for this.
I know, I've been waiting. That's why it's like,
it's great. I'm so happy that this is finally out, because this is an absurdly good movie. Like, it really, it's funny that it's also time travel, but it really reminds me of a movie called Primer back in the day, when you find just this such a tiny small indie gem of a film that you're gonna love forever. And this movie is so incredible, and to only have seen it once at Fright Fest, which is, whilst it was unbelievable and awesome and we loved it, that is such a crazy way of watching films. We saw five other movies that day at the cinema. So I cannot wait to just, one, I'm going to buy this, and then one evening I'm just going to put aside my time and just switch off and watch this. I cannot wait. I'm so looking forward to the rewatch. That's great news. That is, definitely be talking about that in the coming weeks. That's awesome, man. Yeah, definitely. Everyone, like, I completely echo what you said as well. Like, everyone, it doesn't matter what genre you're into. Like, say, if you're even remotely a fan of Black Mirror or any sci-fi in general, you've got to see Lola. Look it up. Yeah, brand new movie. So most people wouldn't have heard of it, and there is a lot of, it's a shit title because it's such a hard thing to track down. It is just Lola on its own, and you'll figure out once you kind of look at the box art and realize it's like a black and white time travel movie, you've got the right one.
If you see in color, you've got the wrong movie.
For sure.
Emma Appleton, it kind of stars, which is probably the biggest kind of name attached to it, so right. If you kind of see her, then you know you're in the right place.
Yeah, that's one of those directors that, like, God knows when he's going to make something else, but I really want to see it. Like, it might be something that just doesn't work for us, because who knows what someone like that would make, but it really is one of those, like, Wonka of the Dead style films where you watch it and you go, how could someone have possibly... The coming up with the idea is one thing, but actually getting it made is something completely else. And, like I say, with the way he shot it with these old-style cameras, let alone getting the rights to the songs that he has that play such a pivotal role in the film...
To get Bowie like that and others as well throughout, you know, I can't remember a couple of the other ones already because that one really hit me.
Yeah, well, that plays such a huge part in the story. That's what I'm talking about. It's like, it's not just there, and it's great because Bowie's
like name checked multiple times.
Like, he's a part, he's a character in the film, and so I think, yeah, that's awesome. It's like, however that happened, it's so great. So, yeah, that's such an awesome film.
That I just if think it's a point that, like, you're indie enough that you just get away with it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, also, I feel like you just have to have the right people to say, like, read this. Because I think if you're... or even show some of it, like, it's so good. Like, I think that's the thing, you almost want a time machine to be like, I'll show you the completed film. Maybe the film was completed, but actually that makes no sense, because if you don't get the rights to Bowie, you're gonna have to change a lot. But it's like, if you show the finished film, you'd be like, no, trust me, it's worth it. Like, we're doing him a service.
Yeah, and you could get that from the script, I think, with it, you know, because it's such a special, unique idea. And then the second, you know, because of the way he shot it, like I say, with his archival footage and getting this stuff and manipulating it, he clearly had some of that as well. Like, as soon as you show some of that and the concept, I think you can just see that it is so incredibly made. It really is a work of art, this movie.
Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, that's awesome stuff. So yeah, like I said at the start of the show, back on Netflix for next week. We've not been on it for a while for a film, I don't think. I can't even remember the last Netflix film that we covered. Have we covered any this year?
You're not going to get that answer from me, are you?
I think we have.
When you mentioned Malum earlier, it took me a good 5 or 10 minutes to remember what that movie was about. So.
Yeah, the less said about Malum, the best. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's weird that it's this spin-off that's about 5 years or more after Bird Box. But yeah, interesting. Like, I like a movie like that because whilst it's in a franchise, you know, that we know, I know next to nothing about this. I've not seen I don't even think I've seen a screenshot, actually. I certainly haven't seen a trailer.
Like, I still don't believe it's a movie, to be honest with you, because it's only you that's like been like, oh yeah, there's this Bird Box sequel coming out and it's from a different country. I'm like, yeah, okay, bro.
Like, yeah, because, like, I'm assuming it's in Spanish as well, but I don't know that. Like, it genuinely could just start and be in any language, but we'll find out next week.
Next week, Wes Craven?
No. We got to talk about new films.
No, this movie doesn't exist, mate. And when we figure that out, we'll have to just do Wes Craven.
Yeah, if it doesn't exist, we'll do Wes Craven. But yeah, for now, that was episode 355. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. I never could, and how could I start that?